My name is Peter, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And first things first, thank the committee for having me here this weekend, and Mark for being a great host. All the hard work you guys did. Bill's been stalking me since last year. So if we can give it up for the committee and say thank you. Grateful to be here and get to share with you my experience and hope on what it was like living life on self-will, what happened, the spiritual transformation, how I'm trying to be today. I get excited to get out on these invitations, having a life of invitation, to share with you about this power called God and how it has recreated and resurrected me in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get to do that for fun and for free, and I suit up and show up on these invitations. I do have a life of service. My whole life is one of service. And I remember the old-timers told me as high as we can go in Alcoholics Anonymous is one of servant. So I'm gladly here tonight to share with you, and I get a little excited when we get to share our stories with each other. And we have great speakers this weekend. We had Miss Soon and a young lady who knocked it out of the park, and Paul and Roger. And I'll apologize for Roger now before he even gets up here. But it's going to be a lot of fun. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol, and I am a recovered alcoholic, and I say that because I am, and anything less than that would be falsely humble. I don't say that to separate myself from anyone in this room because I need you more than you need me. I don't say that to be special or unique. It's just the first promise in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and hopefully I can bear witness to that promise and carry a message of integrity along the way. And I get to experience being recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body and not suffering from untreated alcohols, even though I'm not drinking, walking around in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for 28 years plus sober. So this power called God took me into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get to serve today. And serving is a peace that keeps me sober, but it's because I'm sober that I'm able to do service. It's the power called God that keeps me sober. It's the power called God that brings me to you on June 23rd, 1988. And I can't tell you how grateful I am, because on June 23rd, 1988, my separation from alcohol, I didn't come into AA and decide to quit or put the plug in the jug or decide to go to treatment or maybe I'll try AA once more. I had tried AA, but I was drunk. I heard it works better when you're sober. I remember coming into an AA meeting basically blind, drunk, raising my hand and cursing out the speaker, and wanted a speaking invitation when I was done. And the only thing people in AA said was, keep coming back. But June 23rd, 1988, I had no plans of quitting. June 23rd, 1988, I was living in the back of a hallway. I tried AA, had been through 6 treatment centers. And I was homeless on the streets of New York. It was a town called, area called Alphabet City. And back in the day, it was a sordid spot. And you were really unfortunate if you lived in one of the projects there. And then you were a dirtbag like me running through the neighborhood causing bad things. And that's how I lived. And I took up residency in the back of an abandoned building. And that's where I was living. I was homeless. I lost contact with my family. I knew AA didn't work. I knew treatment didn't work. I'm a Catholic. I tried going to church. I knew that didn't work. I knew nothing worked. And I was just reserved to the fact that just let me die quick and get this over, because everything doesn't work. And I'm pretty much the hopeless variety that I heard about in Alcoholics Anonymous. The people are constitutionally incapable of being honest. And June 23rd showed up, and I remember coming to in the back of a hallway, and I had this moment of clarity. As I got up off the floor, I remember collapsing back down on the floor. No ideas of quitting. No ideas of coming into AA. But I share this because what God does for folks like us is cut right through the noise. And when we're desperate enough, God will respond to that. When the plea is sincere and there's no bargaining chips, no reservation, no lurking notion, just a plea to save my life. And what happened to me when I collapsed on the floor was this very same power I had cursed out, I had mocked and spat at. And if you were a man and were religious, if you were a man and went to church, if you were a man and talked about God, you were weak and cowardly, and I condemned you. And here I was in this moment, June 23rd, 1988, begging that same power to please take me from this. And my words were this: please take me from this. I don't want to die. And that is much raw as I can be in that moment. There were no bargaining chips. I was a homeless bum, literally a homeless bum. I just didn't want to die. I wasn't trying to get sober for the relationship, for the job, my reputation, or make some money. Nothing. I just don't want to die. And that's as honest as I might be for the rest of my life until God calls me home. And then something indescribably wonderful happened to me, which will happen to us while we're drinking, coming in here, and it'll happen to us while we're sober, when we're running around Alcoholics Anonymous untreated. I made a plea to God, take me from this. I don't want to die. And what I heard in my left ear, this whisper, this thunder of silence, it was kind of like that, cut through everything, was the following: enough, I have other work for you to do. It was as if someone leaned over in my ear and whispered. And I was petrified by this event. Because people in Alcoholics Anonymous and people in treatment centers told me, Peter, you're going to drink yourself into wet brain. And before you get to wet brain, you're going to start to hear things and see things and have delusions and illusions about a lot of things in life. And when I heard this voice in this year, I says, oh my God, I bought the farm. This is exactly what they were talking about. I'm completely out of my mind. Here's the good news. When I heard that voice, I was completely out of my mind. And I pray that this mind never returns. And I pray, everyone in this room, that you leave your mind in this room and you go home without it and it never returns again. Because only when I'm out of my mind can I hear this sacred voice. It's when I'm in my mind, I'm listening to me. I'm listening to the chatter of a thousand voices. I'm listening to fear and ego and insecurity and pomp and worship of other things. And it goes on ad infinitum. But when we're out of our mind, something happens. I hear a different voice. I hear a different voice. And that's what happened to me June 23rd, 1988. I was struck sober. I had a moment of clarity, wholeness of mind. I got to hear truth. I've heard many times in Alcoholics Anonymous, the truth will set you free. Know the truth and the truth will set you free. The truth will set you free. I never knew what the truth was. The good news is I do know what the truth is. He, this power called God, is the truth. No God, no freedom. And sometimes it comes in the worst moment of our life. On June 23rd, 1988, I was given my GOD, a gift of desperation. It was a gift from God. I didn't feel that way. It felt very painful June 23rd, 1988, but I've come to find out that because it's painful, it doesn't mean it's bad. I would get painful things happen to me thinking God sending me the trials of Job, for God's sake. But what God was doing was cutting away everything and bringing me to the edge of a cliff, and I begged God for help, and he placed me in my 7 treatment center, and I'm here with you tonight. Talk about the age of miracles still with us. I will not apologize for this power called God or this big book. In fact, in AA, we ought to be a pep rally for the power of God and shout the good news for the sick and suffering walking in the door who can't find their way home, and they make it to us, and we offer something. We transmit what was freely given to us. It's called a message in Alcoholics Anonymous, where we get reborn and resurrected in the sacred rooms. How's that for Alcoholics Anonymous and God? I'm so grateful I was here for it. To tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and how I'm trying to be today. I picked up my first drink. I was about 14 years old. I grew up in a town called Brooklyn, New York, area called Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, New York, where we turned how it works into how you doing. Paul knows the area. The only requirement for membership there is a pinky ring, sunglasses, and gold jewelry. And I remember I was about 14 years old, and I was hanging out on the corner. I loved hanging out with older men, men who were worldly and knowledgeable. They were like 16 and 17. And we were hanging out on the corner this one night, and they were drinking cold 45 beer. I was very reluctant to drink with them. I had a guy at home who was cunning, baffling, and powerful. I called him Dad. This was the alpha male, the Tony Soprano, the guy. In fact, my dad made Tony Soprano look like Tinkerbell. That's a whole other story. This was a man's man. And he would look at you right in the eye, and if you blinked, you were lying. I was blinking all the time. I was just so afraid of this man. He gave me very stern warnings about not drinking with those bums on the corner. So I didn't until this one Saturday night rolled around, and they were drinking cold 45 beer. I was driven by 100 forms of fear back then. I was insecure, fear-based. I look back on my life. I was walking around with one ear clogged and one eye closed and trying to make decisions based on living in the dark. Trying to make decisions with perceptions that were deluded. having opinions with no experience, and I was just trying to figure out my way as went along. And here I was this one Saturday night, my friends are drinking cold 45 beer. I was completely lost because about 6 months earlier, my mom was one of us. Her name was Josephine. My mom drank herself to a place of committing suicide when I was 14 after many attempts. It was very challenging growing up with a mom who was always in an emergency room or some psych ward. And she was drinking and taking Valium, and I remember her sitting with me telling me how much she wanted to die. Would I be able to take care of my younger brothers and my dad? And I'm all but eight. And in January 1974, I woke up to sheer terror. It was the first time I ever heard my dad cry, and he was on a 911 call to the police saying, I think my wife is dead. And I remember being frozen with fear. Between ages 8 and 10, I had a distant relative who was sexually abusing me. My mom commits suicide. I got this guy at home called Dad who's larger than life. And that's not what makes me alcoholic. That's just my circumstances. But I was walking around with a lot of stuff on the inside. And it wasn't like nowadays where you could sit down and go to therapy, go on Dr. Phil and tell everyone you know. You just sucked it up. But that doesn't mean I was well. And I was looking through the world through very hurtful and painful eyes, and I was hearing that way also. So when the quart went around the first, second time, I put my hand in there, and I took a few pops off the quart, and nothing happened. It was sudsy. And I took a few more pops, and a few more pops, and a few more, and then something indescribably wonderful happened to me. Bill says it best. I had arrived. And little by slowly, as I'm drinking cold 45 beer, I arrived. I had air back in my lungs again. I was present to the moment. I can talk to the girls, roughhouse with the guys. By midnight, I was Al Pacino. This was a beautiful thing. Why did I wait so long? It became a panacea for all my ills. I wasn't thinking about my mom and that terrible pain that took outside help to help me process through it with the steps. This guy at home who I didn't like and he didn't like me, Dad, and just all the torment, the sexual abuse stuff that I was hitting puberty and questioning my own sexuality. How could I let a man do this to me? It wasn't until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that I found out how common this is. But we just don't talk about it. We talk about it in AA and fifth steps. We talk about it with the sponsor. So when I drank cold 45 beer, all of that went away. I got beer muscles. I got to be about 6'2 that night and about 220 pounds. I was something to look at when I'm drunk. It was beautiful. Why are you laughing for? No consequences either, my first drunk. I went home that night, got up the next morning. I went down to the park to play ball with the older guys, and I had my stripes. I had my passage into manhood. I had a little drunk story. It was a wonderful thing, and I couldn't wait for the following Saturday to roll around to get lit up again, to capture that elusive feeling. Here's the problem. I think of a 14-year-old now who needs a drink to get through the day. I think of a 14-year-old man or woman, a young boy or girl right now who's had sexual abuse or parents commit suicide and needs a drink to get through the week and has that kind of trauma and nowhere to process of it. Something's radically wrong with that picture. And there I was at 14. I was already lost. Bassoon talked about it last night. Just lost. The young lady talked about it this afternoon. Just lost. I was 14 without a clue, and no one gave me a manual. That's just the way it was. But when I drank, everything was okay. I'm going to be okay. There was no more pain. I was present to the moment. It was electrifying. I had arrived. And my drinking, little by slowly, started to assume more serious proportions. It went from Saturday to Friday and Saturday, to Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And little by slowly, I'm drinking during the week, and I start to experience consequences because of my drinking. See, our big book says years of living with an alcoholic will make any child or wife neurotic. The whole family has become ill. And little by slowly, my two brothers and my dad are not alcoholic, but they start to experience alcoholism because I was infecting them. I can never step up to the plate here and say all I do is not drink and go to meetings and that is it, period. Because that would be really selfish of me and pretty arrogant of me to think that that's the remedy, just not drinking. What about the people I leveled on the way in here? Not only my family, but anyone who came in contact with me. If you were in breathing distance of me, you were hurt by me. And not because I'm so powerful, but alcoholism infects people. It destroys people. In fact, most people in this room, we've dodged a lot of bullets to get here. Most folks who suffer from what we suffer from don't survive. And the reality is, and I hate to be doom and gloom, the reality is this. If we all agree to meet here, everyone in this room, next year, I wonder how many of us are going to be back here next year and how many are going to be lost to alcoholism. I have a daily reprieve that hinges on my connection with God. And how many of our AA meetings, you don't even hear about God. You don't even hear about a big book or the 12 steps. In fact, don't bring in God because you might piss off a newcomer and we're going to deny them the solution. But I didn't know any of that back then. I just knew I drank and I felt absolutely wonderful. But there were consequences in my family. I have two younger brothers who started to become afraid of me. And my dad wondered what was going on with him. I come from an Italian-American family. I'm the firstborn. The expectations were mild. Pope or president. I landed in AA. I mean, you know. I start to steal from my family who loved me. I start to not come home and break curfew. Then there was no curfew. Then my dad was just hoping he didn't get a 911 call on his oldest son. And I was always taking things that didn't belong to me. I started to steal from my family, steal from my brother's little piggy banks from that top drawer. They would hold money, that this big jar of quarters. I take that. Anything that wasn't nailed down was coming with me. And my alcoholic mind justified all of it. It was really okay. I'll make it up to them. And by now I'm like 17 and 18 and I'm drinking this way. And I'm just dishonest already. And one morning I woke up and I had no money. I couldn't find any money. I couldn't find any jewelry to take. But I found my dad's checkbook. And I had this fabulous idea. Well, it seemed fabulous at the time. I'll forge his name and go down to the local store. Local grocery store. They all knew my dad. They were very afraid of my dad. They weren't going to give him any lip. And I made up a story. My dad didn't have cash. He gave me this check. Can you cash it? Is anything for your pop? And they gave me $20 off the check. I thought I hit Powerball or something. This was a great thing. So I walked out with some beer. And I did that again and again and again. See, I didn't know, because I was about sharp as a bowling ball, I didn't know about checking statements. See, I thought you wrote a check and it just disappeared. And then one day my dad got his bank statement with a bunch of forged checks. And then he came looking for me. Now, this is not the type of man you want looking for you, even when he's happy. And he was never happy. It was a scene out of Goodfellas when he caught me. I was sitting in a car in Lower Manhattan next to this young lady across the street from the Brooklyn Bridge in Lower Manhattan. And my dad drove up and jumped out of the car. And he screamed my name. And I handled it like a man would. It sounded like this. Honey, that's my dad. I'm running away. You talk to him. And my dad caught me and I went to my first treatment center. And I spent 28 days in treatment, not conceding to my innermost self I was an alcoholic. I didn't have a problem. I just got caught. And soon as I walked into treatment, I played the mom committing suicide card. I played I'm afraid of my dad. I played my sex trauma issues to the hilt. I played all of it. Even though those are very real, I used it. I used it as a mask. I used it as a cover-up for what was really going on inside, that I'm alcoholic already. But how can I work on a solution if I don't even concede to my inmost self I have a problem? The great thing about the program in this fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous is that it's not aimed at the mind. It's aimed at the spirit. If it was aimed at the mind, we'd be one big self-help group. But it's aimed at touching the spirit and awakening the spirit to give me a new mind, to give me new perceptions and conceptions about everything. But my first treatment center, that wasn't happening. And after 28 days, I left, and I had that same young lady meet me at the door with the pint. I cracked the seal, picked up a drink, and the allergy was on me as if I never stopped. I'm an alcoholic. When I drink, the cravings intensify, never satisfied. I'm still in a place of mental obsession. As far as the spiritual malady and the remedy to that, nothing was being done. I was just separated. I have found out the hard way in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially my first 6 months in here, that I can... can be separated from alcohol and other mood or mind-altering substances and still be as loony as I was when I was using. In fact, my truth is this: I'm more dangerous sober without spiritual muscles than when I'm drunk. When I'm drunk, I'm predictable. Eventually, I'm going to start to cry, and when you feel bad for me, I'm going to hit you up for money, and then I'll pass out. It's when I come to, I'm probably going to rob your house. I'm probably going to steal from you. I'm going to do bad things. I don't have a good reaction to just being abstinent. I learned that my first 6 months in AA, where my illness went underground and resurfaced in other areas. Sex sprees, food sprees, money sprees, fear sprees, thinking sprees. I was always thinking. By the way, how many folks drove here alone in the car tonight? Show of hands. Anyone drive? Okay. You're not telling me the truth. I'm going to tell you why. If you think about the ride over here alone in your car, how many people were in your head talking to you at the same time? How many arguments did you get into before you walked in here? I can't believe they didn't ask me to speak. I'm spiritual. Are you driving? Hoping to meet the future Mr. or Mrs. X at the conference. Thinking about what happened to me in the third grade. What's going to happen to me when I'm rich. And they go, I'm too tall. I'm too short. I'm too fat. I'm too thin. I should. We should all over ourselves. We argue with each other. And then we walk into the AA conference and go, Joe, how you doing? I'm wonderful, actually. Start oming in the corner, right? Well, here's the bad news. When you go back to your car, there's 45 people in the back seat waiting for you. Oh, baby, we're doing a lot of thinking. I remember my sponsor, Mark, when he was alive, he says, never be nervous about doing one of these things because the people, most of us, are listening with one ear and thinking about what we're going to say with the other ear. So no one's paying attention anyway. But alcoholism could go underground and resurface in other areas. And I use self-reliance to overcome self. I go into fear, current agnosticism, more fear, more self-reliance, a vicious cycle while I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew nothing about that back then. I got discharged from treatment. I was drinking. I was right back again, listening to the voices. And my first 6 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was still listening to the voices. I was still acting out. I didn't have any kind of spiritual muscles to be still in my own skin. How many times we can be sitting on the couch, all the bills are paid, the job is secure, we have enough money in the bank, the kids are healthy, the relationship is great, and suddenly your mind goes, yeah, but... And then it starts again. I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous to start listening to a different voice and to detach from everything my mind tells me. The mind, the greatest predator ever to hit the planet. It is a thing that causes problems all the time, problems of my own making. All wrongdoing comes from my mind. Once the mind's transformed, what wrongdoing can exist if I'm just coming from spirit? And Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to live from spirit rather than the mind. I made my second treatment center. I made my third treatment center. I made my fourth treatment center. And bless my poor family because they were doing the roller coaster ride with me. Every time I came out of the treatment, the goose hung high. They were just praying that something would work. I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous how God speaks through brick walls. These brick walls that we put up, self-imposed crisis, it's called life. And what I try to do is get around them, my family comes with me. Go under them, my family comes with me. Punch a hole through it, my family comes with me. And then I realized one particular day, I had to drop to my knees and beg God for help. And once I do that, I hear the voice of God saying, there's an entrance right there. It took a lot to get to that point. Almost killed me and leveled my family. I got a job as a dock worker, a longshoreman in South Brooklyn. Not the training ground for spiritual growth. I work with men who are fed up with the day at sunrise, and there I was, and I took my alcoholism then. I was making lots of money as a young fella, and we used to get paid on Wednesday morning. And Thursday, I was going to certain folks to get money. I was borrowing money on Thursday, borrowing money on Friday, borrowing money on Saturday, had to pay them back. I never had money, and I was making a lot of it, all to keep the drunk going. There was a whole chunk of years in my story when I got addicted to non-conference approved dry goods. I walked into my fifth treatment center. I was diagnosed with Hep C. I had abscesses on my arm. I had holes in my arms. And I weighed about 130 pounds. I'm about 195 now. It's about 60 pounds less than I weigh now. I was dying of alcoholism. I remember my dad found me in the grip of the grapes one particular day. And he threw me in the back seat of his car. And he was sitting there with his wife. And he's just screaming at me. I didn't hear any of it. And his wife turned around and looked at me. She says, "It hurts my heart to see you die in front of me." Those words pierced through everything. I said, "I'm dying, aren't I? I'm dying. This self-imposed crisis, and I can't even get out even though I want to." Because by the time I got to my fifth treatment center, I had a powerful desire to stop drinking. I didn't know the big book says that a powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. It'll bring me to AA, it'll bring me to treatment, it'll bring me to your door and say, "Bill, can you sponsor me? But I need something for the long distance, and that has to be God." I got fired as a longshoreman. This job was probably the second most powerful union in the nation at one time. You cannot get fired from this job. You cannot get fired from this job. I got fired from that job because of my shenanigans. And I remember my dad showing up like the cavalry one particular day. Guys, if it wasn't for the courage, strength, and direction that my God gave my dad, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. But he showed up like the cavalry and he says, "If you do the right thing, if you do everything those people tell you, I'll see what I can do about getting your job back." Now, I had been through my fifth treatment center by now, and I spent 9 weeks in my fifth treatment center. So I knew treatment. I knew how to do treatment. I knew I was alcoholic. I knew I couldn't stop drinking. I don't know how much I wanted to stay stopped, but here I was in a terrible dilemma. And I will go into this fifth treatment center, and I'm up there for 9 weeks. Now, back in the day, it was a 28-day and you're out. What they had to do with me, the clinicians and the doctors, they had to write up basically bogus psych issues. So the insurance company would pay to keep me there longer because they said, if you leave after 28 days, you're going to die. And so they put me in this thing called a flight deck, and I was up there for 9 weeks, and they take me over for AA meetings when H and I would come in. And approaching 9 weeks, I start to feel better, look healthier. I wasn't even thinking about drinking. I'm thinking, I'm good to go. That was one bad dream. It's really going to be okay. And I was discharged on a Saturday morning after 9 weeks of being in my fifth treatment center. Soon as I hit the fresh air, alcoholism was on me as if it never left. I was thinking again. I had anxiety again. My stomach was upside down again. I had chatter of a thousand voices. I couldn't pay attention. I lost my appetite. I was vibrating on the inside, and I experienced white-knuckle sobriety for 2 days. I couldn't take it. My mind kept telling me, just one little drinky poo and your stomach will settle down and the anxiety will go away and you can be okay. Just get one drink in you. I promise you. I promise you. It's me, your alcoholism. Don't worry. Just one drink. Just one drink. We're going to be okay. Don't even drink hard liquor. Just get a beer. We're going to be okay. I wrestled with that for 2 days. I couldn't take it. On Monday, I was in front of the liquor store waiting for the liquor store owner to get there. He rolled up the fence. I put my money under the glass partition. "Give me a pint of Mr. Boston." I cracked the seal, I ran outside, and I got the liquor down as fast as possible to capture that elusive feeling so I can breathe. I didn't drink for effect anymore. I drank just to breathe. I drank just to stand up, to be back in my skin. I can't tell you how many times on my way to treatment, on my way to detox, I would be crying. "I'm never going to do this again. I can't do it again." And as soon as I'm discharged, I drank again. 6 out of 7 treatment centers, guys, I managed 2 days sobriety. That's all I can come up with. On my way to a liquor store, I'd be crying, "I don't want to do this anymore. Give me a pint," because I had to drink. It was beyond any control that I can come up with. And because I go to meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous, my alcoholism doesn't take a vacation. It'll get me where I think I'm good. It'll get me right in here. It'll get me. I'll get hijacked on the way home from this conference if I'm not spiritually fit. I'll get hijacked on the way home from work. Want to get home to the family, have a nice dinner. Just left an AA meeting. Just got a year anniversary coin or whatever it is. Everything's good. And on my way home, my car makes a left instead of a right. And I'm back in the gin mill doing it all over again. We get hijacked. And no human power can prevent that. God gave me a taste of that. This apartment my dad got me. He showed up like the carries. I'm going to give you one more shot. Let's see what you can do. And he got me this little studio apartment in Brooklyn. He furnished the entire place for me. Put a little furniture in there, stocked up the refrigerator, got me new clothes, bought me new shoes. They were still in the boxes. Put some money on a table, put a phone in, got a nice TV. And if I can prove myself to him, I would get my job back. And as soon as he left, I carried the TV out the door. And it wasn't flat screens like we got now. These were the old-fashioned TVs. You think anyone will notice? You know. And I sold all the clothes, and I sold everything in the place. And eventually I was thrown out of this little apartment, not only for not paying my rent, but the element I brought in there became my own little Bowery, my own little hell. I thought I can escape God and escape AA. But there's another book that says whether I make my bed in heaven or in hell, God is there. And because I'm Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have more God than a drunk under a bridge tonight, drinking themselves to death. We have just as much God in us. The difference is I came into AA, got a program, and got a sense of connectedness to my God rather than separateness from my God. If I could have sold the refrigerator and carried that out the door, I would have sold that too. This little studio apartment was hell. I had filthy laundry all over the place because I wasn't washing clothes and I had stopped bathing. My bed today is a clean bed. I sleep with a woman I adore. Clean sheets, clean comforter, clean pillows. I had a mattress that was bloodstained and soiled, and I would crash out in there and not pay rent. I'd miss the Boston Blackberry brandy bottles all over the place. This is not for shock. This is where my alcoholism took me to, where God had to bring me to the edge of a cliff to have my nails dug in to get my attention, because a day shy or a day later, you have a different speaker here. But God will go to any lengths to have relationship with any one of us. He's still pursuing us tonight as we sit here, looking as good as we do. God's still pursuing every one of us, begging to have a relationship with us. Whether we're in the most sordid moment of our life or sitting high on the hog in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're not even thinking about drinking for many years, God is still pursuing to experience greater oneness with us. We were born to be saints, like it or not. It's time in Alcoholics Anonymous I start acting like one with all my flaws, with all my brokenness. Because only in that brokenness can God's light shine through and wake me up and bring me closer, in a sense, to Him. Whether I'm here for the first day, I'm here for 40 years, God is still pursuing, because I have work to do to stand by the door, as Sam Shoemaker says, and get the next one coming in. I didn't get sober so I can have a nice job and a nice relationship. God gave me that, and He'll take it away if He sees fit. God has removed many things from me, which I interpreted as bad because they were painful. They were just standing in the way of me doing work for Him. He prunes the tree so the tree bears good fruit and people can eat from the vine like we do in AA. We feed each other. But a bad tree will bear fruit and people will get sick. And He can't have that. God got me sober to do one thing, be His servant and help another drunk achieve sobriety. And when I lose sense of that, I lose you. This is a reflection of what I do. My whole life is one of service. God continually removes things. I got thrown out of this apartment. It was a nasty place when I got thrown out of there. My landlord, I remember arguing with him. How dare you do this to me? The place reeked. I reeked even more. It was disgusting. It was filthy. And I couldn't get my job back. My family locked all doors. Even my grandparents said, you can't come here anymore. And I began this thing called homelessness. What a huge alcohol problem. I remember the first night I was on the street, I said, this is pretty cool. No one can check up on me. This is great. Then it got dark out. And I said, it's not a good idea. I was petrified. I don't do the streets well. I got beat up a lot. Got beat up by police, got beat up by drug dealers, got beat up a lot. I was walking around with this impending doom all the time. I remember I couldn't even walk on the sidewalk like most folks do, because my mind was telling me someone's going to jump out and shoot you or stab you. I used to walk on the avenue in the middle of the street. I felt more protected that way. I can only imagine what I look like. I wound up outside the Manhattan Port Authority on the Upper West Side one day. And until this moment, I don't know how I got there. And I don't know what happened to me afterwards, but God gave me truth for a moment. God interrupted this whole mess for me and served me truth. I was blind drunk and God got me instantly sober. And what I did in this moment was, as if my life passed before my eyes, I thought of my mom, thought of my brothers, thought of my dad, this whole life, and I realized what I had turned into. I'm literally a bum in the street. I'm like 26, 27 years old. I have blood-stained, soiled pants on. I'm walking around with a turtleneck and a jacket. I'm sweating and cold at the same time. I'm dehydrated. I hadn't eaten. I was living to get a pint and eat some Valium. That's all I did. I had construction boots and the right shoe had no front. And I'm expecting just to blend in looking like this. And I would panhandle through the streets of New York. And as soon as I get enough money, get a pint, I go back into the hallway. And that's where I live, just live in a hallway. And that's when I found this building on the Lower East Side, this abandoned building. And I felt safe in an abandoned building because the cops didn't roll through abandoned buildings too much. It was just that bad of a scene. But there I was, tucked behind this old metal radiator, thinking no one can see me, like an ostrich burying a head in the sand, thinks no one can see it. That was me. And I'd come out like a vampire and get some liquor and go back in. Come out like a vampire, hustle up some money, get some liquor and go back in. And the will to live was gone. I was experiencing this moral humiliation of everything. They were out the window. I didn't care what I looked like. I didn't care what I sounded like. I didn't care. I just need a pint, so I stopped getting sick. Because I couldn't believe it. I'm 27. I heard these stories in AA. I heard these stories in treatment about tremors. I said, what is that? I'll never have that. And I'm 27. I'm walking around like this, full of anxiety. Then it got to a point, I can't get drunk. I can't get sober. And the first drink comes right back up. Oh, my God. What is wrong with me? I don't know what happened to me, but outside this Port Authority, I cursed God, and I don't know what happened to me afterwards. Until June 23rd, 1988 showed up. It was a short time later. I had AMA'd out of my sixth treatment center. By the grace of God, I got put in my sixth treatment center. And after a day and a half, I left because I knew what I was in for with the detox. I remember twice detoxing and had to be hospitalized in a treatment center because my detoxes were so awful and I'm not about to go through that again. My mind is still lying to me, still screaming at me, just get out of here and get a drink and start over. You don't need this, Pete. And I would buy the lie and the truth almost killed me at the end. Clancy always heard talks about this disease of perceptions. I was right in the middle of it and couldn't find my way out, which alcoholism loves to do, give me a sense of hopelessness. There is no way out of this. Might as well just die. And I hit the streets. June 23rd showed up, and I have this event happen to me. As I shared with you at the beginning, please take me from this. I don't want to die. I had this moment of clarity. I need to call my dad. I was going to hobble over to a payphone and call my dad, collect. But God gave me some integrity where if I call my dad, he was the only guy on the planet that's going to come get me to come see his firstborn in this condition. A bum on the street, I couldn't do it. My dad was in a town called Atlantic City, spending some time with his wife down there. My dad told me this story at my first day anniversary. God works through people, but it isn't only people in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just people. While my dad was spending some time in Atlantic City with his wife, he had this feeling. He says this feeling in his gut, how does he describe it? That godly voice, that quiet voice that cuts through all the noise. And it was he had to get back to Brooklyn to find me, had to get to New York to find me, that his oldest son was in trouble. And he told his wife, my son Peter's in trouble, I need to go find him. And he treks his way back and is running, driving through all these areas, and he finds me. And there I am just off the corner, dying of alcoholism. I can't even fathom what that's like to have your son or daughter dying in front of you. I'm in the treatment center business for many years. I hear the calls all the time, but I'm not a parent. I can't even fathom what that must be like. But there was my dad, and he got out of the car and walked across the street and called my name. And I remember telling Dad, I'm okay, I'm fine, don't worry. And as he got close enough to me, I collapsed. This I will remember, I pray, till the day God takes me home. because it was a sordid moment for both of us. It was an incredibly painful moment for both of us. How dark it is before the dawn. Because what God did was lift us both up and plant us in new soil. I questioned my life as a young man and as a son to my dad. And I know my dad was questioning his role as a parent and as a man. What was missing? What were we doing wrong? We missed the boat. We never got along. We never even looked at each other. It was kind of like passing ships in the night. And here we were in the worst moment, and I collapsed in my dad's arms, and I remember my dad holding me up, and what this mantra saying over and over and over again, I'm not going to lose my son to this. I'm not going to lose my son to this. I'm not going to lose my son. I don't know who he was talking to, but I got a pretty good idea. See, we can pray a lot. We can shout God on the street corners. We can come into AA and give a profound 11-step talk. Words, I'm not interested. Actions, I am. My dad in that moment was the most spiritual man I ever met in my life. And it became really attractive. I remember being very aware that my dad and I never did this. I felt like an 8-year-old kid wrapped up in his dad's arms. There was some security in this horrible moment. And off I went to my 7th treatment center. Guys, after 10 days of being in treatment, after all of this, my mind said, one more drink and we'll go back to group. Just get out of here, just get a little pint, just something, and we go back to group. It won't hurt you this time. And they shipped me off to Minnesota. I remember sitting with one of the counselors up there, and I says, I couldn't believe I was saying this. I want a drink. I need a drink. I would never tell you I want a drink because you just might stop me from drinking. I can't do that. I said, I want a drink. I need a drink. I want a drink. I need a drink. They said, hold on. They shipped me off to a place in Minnesota. I wound up living out there for almost a whole year, and I was brought to a meeting called the Three Legacies meeting. Friday night meeting, probably as big as this group tonight. The greeters were at the door with shirt and tie. Women had suits on. The speakers were dressed in suits. Everyone looked wonderful, pristine, impeccable. And I wanted what they had to offer. Not like some meetings we go to today where the speakers look like they're going to commit a felony as soon as the talk is over. They gave AA its respect. They brought humility and integrity to a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wanted what they had. And after about 11 months, almost a year, I was brought home. And I was brought to my first home group, the Free Spirit Group in Brooklyn. And there was a gentleman there who was walking around with this book and sponsoring a lot of people and was not liked by the majority because he spoke truth from this book. He wasn't popular. But God brought him to me and put me in front of him. He said, can you sponsor me? And we began this journey through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was sponsored by that man for about 8 years or so. And I needed a new teacher. And Mark H. was put in my path. And through Mark H., I got to know great teachers, my lineage, the precious, rich lineage that God put me to be a part of. My job now is to keep the light on, to keep the lamp on top of the table lit so it lights up the room so those who are lost can find their way, not tuck the lamp under the table so no one can find it, to be impeccable with our words, to be impeccable with my word. Because it's not what goes in that defiles me. It's what comes out that defiles me and hurts other people. Because I may be the only copy of a big book someone reads. How am I doing with that? My big book says we're agents for God. An agent represents the principal. How am I doing with that? Representing God. What an honor. I can't go through with it. But that's what our book says to do. Go represent this great power. Practicing fidelity to God and not having gods before my God like money, property, prestige, none of that stuff, because none of it matters at the end of the day. I know what it's like to be on a street and wanting to die. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and say, just follow a few simple rules. You won't even be thinking about a drinking and you'll have a passion for life, be excited about life. That's what you gave me. So I make a living, self-supporting through my own contributions because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been broke, and I almost had to declare bankruptcy, and I've gone through health scares. I've lost many, many people. If you're around here a while, you're going to lose a lot of close people. Lost family members, went through a divorce, went through all of that. And somehow God allowed me to go through it head up and shoulder square and chop wood and carry water and seek this God. I will tell you, in some of those very, very challenging times turned out to be the most intimate moments with me and God. There was nowhere else to go. Just on my knees and lay my troubles at his feet with bowed head and bended knee. Father, please have mercy. Show me the way out. And then you would show up, or you would show up, or you would show up and rally around me and hold me up. Because I don't have the strength to do that. And I've been able to experience great joys in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you were there, and you were there, and you were there to experience that with me. And not be envious of me or jealous about it. But just support me. The sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That guy I called Dad, who never got along with me or him with each other. I can tell you. My best friend. An incredible event happened for me. I used to tell my dad, Dad, I love you. He says, yes, same here. Same here. My dad's old school. I think he was born in 200 AD. That's how, you know, really old school. Then he started to just reply, I love you too. But God is contagious. You get one of us who is spiritually fit and go back into that home that was leveled by alcoholism. And we just walked a walk, chop wood and carry water, chop wood and carry water. Just walked a walk. Don't have to preach, don't have to pontificate. Just live this AA life, the spiritual AA life. You will see how that leaves residue with the family. They start to feel different, look different, sound different. Some of them go to the sacred rooms of Al-Anon to get help. It's a wonderful thing. And I remember telling my dad, God bless you. He would never say anything. My dad's not a God guy. I believed in God, but I'll worry about that when the day comes. One day I get off the phone, my dad's, Dad, God bless you. He said, same here. I said, I'm getting closer. I got this really neat business thing that happened to me. Just partnered up with some folks. I'm finally my own boss. My dad was just thrilled for me because he knows how hard I worked in the business I'm in for so many years. I have no college education. I just scratch and clawed, and God gave me some gifts. A lot of things I can't do well. There's a few things God gave me. And once we realize what our purpose in life is, we can begin to wear the world like a loose garment. We've got a purpose. Chop wood and carry water, that's direction. My dad was just so thrilled for me. And right before we got off the phone, I heard this. God bless you. I almost drove off the road. This godly thing that we get to experience for fun and for free. I do know if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and we need help, I need help. If I call my therapist, I'm going to get an answering machine. If you call the cops, you're probably going to get taken and arrested. You call a drunk, this is what you hear. Where are you? We're on our way. That's my Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe, because you always showed up for me. In the worst of times, in the most joyful of times, my dad and I have this really neat relationship. My family and I, we have this really neat relationship, me and my brothers. Now, when you walk into the house, you don't hear like harps in the background and doves flying around the room. We have our stuff. My middle brother has come down with Parkinson's. And my youngest brother was diagnosed with this thing, bipolar, extreme bipolar. But here's what AA's did. I got off the plane. I was coming back from Texas after a talk. I was living in Union, New Jersey. My dad calls me a bit frantic. He says, your brother's here. He says, I'm about to call 911 or take him to the hospital. He's having an episode. We didn't know what was going on. He was on the downside of this. And I drove over there, and I'm looking at my brother, who's about 6'3", just full of muscle. I hate him. He's just ripped all over. Just and he's just in a puddle. And he kept talking about, I'm so alone, I'm so alone, I'm so alone. He was on the downside of this bipolar thing. And I did what AA taught me to do, and I did what I learned to do in my business, and I got him in off the ledge and eventually got him to a doctor, and he's been properly medicated, and thank the good Lord he's doing okay. I bring this up for this reason. Our big book says, we know loneliness such as few do. So I called up some guys I sponsor, and I called up some of the men that I'm friends with in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I shared with them what my brother was going through. And I said, would you guys do me a favor? Just call my brother. You guys don't have bipolar. But we know about that lonely feeling when no one can hear us. Can you just give them a call? Every one of them called me. My brother says, I didn't know you had this many friends. My brother loves us in AA. My dad kept telling everyone, these guys in AA are calling your brother. They spend time with him on the phone. They did that for fun and for free. That's the chopping wood and carrying water. No applause, no spotlight. We just get the ground fertile and God will do the growing. No one's looking, but we're chopping wood and carrying water because we reflect this power called God. In the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not just about my home group. This is about life, a design for living that works, even in rough going. Alcoholics Anonymous has always shown up for me. There was a tremendous mystery that I was walking with, this pain. And we all have that thing in us, that thing that has happened last week or 20 years ago where we swallow hard that unresolved, painful thing that we walk with. I had many of those. One of them was this. When my mom committed suicide, where did she go? How come she went? I had this riddle. And through the power of meditation, where God hears the heart and reads the soul, he delivered to me when the ground was fertile enough in a meditation experience. I love the beach. I live in Florida. I love being by the water. When I first got sober, I would light two candles, one for the sick and suffering in and out of the rooms, and light another candle for my mom. I didn't go to Mass much, but I would go to church and light these two candles. I make some prayer for both, and out the door I go. I was doing this for 9 years, and I'm meditating for 9 years, and I'm praying for 9 years, taking the directions from a sponsor. And one morning in meditation, I go into a place where you forget you're meditating. You transcend this. And God said, now the ground's fertile. And in this meditation, I'm sitting on this beach. And off on the horizon walks the carpenter, my God, towards me. And literally, out of his chest appears my mom, showing oneness, which is what the goal is, oneness with God. No God and, it's just God. And we walk with it, whether we're here or there. And as she walked towards me, she kneeled down. I became this little 8-year-old boy, and she gave me this hug. I remember being on a blind drunk and cursing and God out. I says, if you send my mom down and let her give me a hug, you rip me off, I'll quit drinking. It took 9 years in meditation. My mom walks towards me, kneels down. I'm this little 8-year-old boy, and mom gives me this big hug in meditation. Guys, you know when you're 8, 9, and 10, and mama gives you a hug, it's a great place. The world's a great place to be. Safe. I stood up and I became an adult, and my mom held on to me once more in this meditation. My God put his arm around my shoulder. I've shared this from a million podiums. And eyeball to eyeball we were, no words were spoken. And what he said to me was, she's okay, she's with me. Bliss is putting it mild. Utopia feeling, putting it mild. How could you adequately explain a God experience? You can't, because if I could, it wasn't godly. My mom pointed off to the horizon this way, pointed off to the horizon that way. And each time she pointed, she pointed at these flickering lights, hundreds and hundreds of flickering lights. She held on to me once more. Her and my higher power walked off, and I came out of a meditation weeping. What just happened? I don't know if this meditation lasted an hour, 10 minutes. I have no idea. When we're in that place, those godly moments, there's no time, there's no calendar. It ceased to exist, but we are present. And so I called my sponsor and I shared with him what just happened. As I didn't get all these flickering lights, I don't get it, what just happened. And he says, haven't you been lighting candles for your mom now about 9 years? I said, yeah. He says, she let you know she got them. And I realized at that moment, knowing that I'm known by my Creator, what a tremendous gift that my God walks with me. My God hears the heart, hears your heart. Our God is trying to pursue us and have a oneness relationship with us. And he delivered it to me in a meditation when I wasn't expecting it. How God shows up. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But when God shows up and is profound. I continue to go to church, but not Mass. I just want to close with this story. I'm doing a fifth step with my current sponsor, Mickey M. from Colorado. What a teacher God has given me. I'm reading to him my fifth step, came to institutions, and I'm reading about the Catholic Church. Very matter of fact, about some of the problems in my church, some of the things you all read in the headlines. And it's very matter of fact that my sponsor said, whoa, hold on, back up. How long has this resentment been going on? And since when have you gotten bigger than AA that you can walk around with a resentment like this, the number one offender? Well, he gave me some instructions about amends because I've been saying slandering and saying bad things about him. Bit of a hypocrite. Always praying to God, but some problems with this institution and generalizing everything. You need to make amends, which comes out of the fifth step. So in the church, we have something called confession. I walked in there one day. I sat down, and I spoke to the pastor. He says, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and here's why I'm here. And I told him what I was doing. I said, Father, what can I do to make it right? He said, can you come to Mass tomorrow? He gave me absolution. I said, sure. High Mass, 10:30 Sunday morning. I'm walking in. The bells are going off, and I begin to weep because I was home. I've been going every Sunday since. I'm not on the road. And sometimes when I'm on the road, I'll find a local church because that's important to me, along with not instead of. But I got home. I got free of that resentment. I got free of all of it. I get to serve communion in my church and read scripture when I'm asked on the altar. Talk about a complete transformation from the inside out. We talk about the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, the difference between having the grace of God and experience that power which gives us grace. We talk about the grace of God, the grace of God, the grace of God, but for the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And some of us will get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get to do a talk at 6 o'clock in the morning on the other side of the state because there's a whole bunch of people going to be there and they ask me to speak. So we make a road trip. That's a beautiful thing. But to go to our religious communities once a week for 1 hour to tell our Heavenly Father, whatever we come from, thank you for this life. I got too busy. How many of us are too busy to do that? Well, AA is my church. Well, God bless you. But what if you took care of me day after day after day, brought me food, brought me sobriety, brought me clothes, brought me integrity, brought me humility, just kept taking care of me regardless of the weather, no matter how much I hollered at you, you kept showing up and gave me all of this stuff every single day, literally breathed life into me. And no matter what I said or how I sounded or what I looked like on the way out the door, you said, I love you. And after about a year or two of this, you said, can you come to my house? I'm having a birthday party. Would you come to my house for 1 hour? I want you to meet some of my friends. And I said, I can't. I'm too busy. And another year goes by and I said, will you come to my house? And every day you're serving me, giving me this wonderful life, but I can't go to your house for 1 hour. And I realize this God, I can't visit his house for 1 hour a week. What a hypocrite I was. I don't live like that anymore. Because on Sundays, I visit my dad's house, my father's house. And if I'm on the road, I'll do it another time. All because of the sacred rooms called Alcoholics Anonymous. You've put my family back together. You've given me this life. I pray to be teachable and pass this message on with the same love and gratitude that you freely give it to me every time I walk in the door. That's all I got. Peace.